Patrick.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt pain?
Extraordinary pain.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah. Like the biggest pain, discus blood in the neck.
Was it a girl?
Whoa, no, it was physical, ouch. You know, TENS machine strapped to my back for weeks on end, killing me. I hated it.
Oh, I wasn't expecting you to say any of that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thought you were going to talk about a girl at university.
Oh, that was painful.
Misjudged that.
Oh, I'm not going to talk about that, though.
Okay.
No.
The Match, because 90 minutes can last a lifetime. Episode 2, 2nd of April 2011. Stoke City against Chelsea at the Britannia Stadium.
Last week was all about nervous beginnings. This is the story of a brutal ending and a story of pain. Danny Higginbottom is one of the most honest, heart on his sleeve, not just sportsmen, but people that I've ever met. I don't profess to know him well, but have worked with him, and his passion for the game, his need to improve, his willpower, all shine through in his commentary and analysis of whatever he's doing. He's someone who simply wants to get better at anything that he does. The first time that I worked with him was doing a Juventus game. I sent him some probable lineups, trying to be helpful, presuming, I suppose patronisingly, that he didn't know much about Italian football. He replied with a friendly text which queried the system that I had Juve playing and how the players would fit into it. He'd gone through Max Allegri's historical tactical formations, even from his early time at Cagliari, and come up with his own system, which turned out to be right. I stared at my phone with a combination of admiration at his diligence and a sense of... we've got one here. Attention to detail, working hard and honesty took him from an eventual rejection by Manchester United after 7 first-team appearances, successful times at Derby and Southampton, and then eventually to 2 spells at Stoke City, the club with which he's most associated. The start of 2011 was an exciting time for Danny. Life going well off the field, a winning goal scored in an FA Cup quarter-final against West Ham, and plenty to look forward to. As he observes himself, things almost going too well. And then Stoke played Chelsea in a Premier League game in early April. And this is how Danny was feeling in the tunnel.
We were on a good run. We'd won the previous few games, and we always felt good when we played against the big clubs at Stoke, particularly in that era. You know, we always used to give them a game. So we were confident, like I say, with the run that we'd just been on, that we could give Chelsea a game. And the preparation all leading up that week was how we could go about beating them. You know, certain things that we'd do on the training ground, and then the preparation for the game was key. And like I say, we were all really looking forward to the game.
And what sort of person were you in the tunnel? Were you you see smilers,
yeah.
You see sort of snarlers, were you somewhere in between?
I think from Friday evening at 7 o'clock, didn't want to talk to anybody. It was horrible. I just want to do my own thing Saturday morning. I didn't want any of my family talking to me. Because you were just so zoned in on the game, and then get to the warm-up, do the warm-up and everything. The same with the tunnel, yeah, you just go into your own world, and then the minute the game finishes, then you go back to the person that you normally are. But that was just part and parcel of being a footballer during my career then. But yeah, very much concentration when you get in the tunnel. You know, it's time to get ready for the game, and you were just left with your own thoughts before you walked out onto the pitch.
And you'd had, by anyone's standards, an incredible couple of weeks, hadn't you? You'd scored a winning goal in a FA Cup quarter-final, so looking ahead to a semi. You'd also, I think, replicated almost the same goal in a league game against Newcastle, and very special stuff going on in your life as well. So it had been an incredible couple of weeks.
Yeah, it had. And I think, first of all, start of March, my second youngest was born. And then... the manager at the time, Tony Pulis, he let me stay at home. We were playing away at West Ham. I wasn't in the team at that time. I think we got beat 3-0 or 3-1, something along them lines. And then we were playing West Ham again the next week in the quarterfinals. And I was brought back into the team and scored the goal that took us to Wembley. And the whole city was buzzing. It was something that the city really needed. You know, it's a working class city. And the one thing at that time with Stoke City was that the players and the supporters all sung off the same hymn sheet. You know, we represented the supporters on the pitch with the way that we were. There was, you know, we weren't technically the most gifted, but we'd give everything that we had on the pitch, and they appreciated that. So that was fantastic. And then I'd probably say at the time our best Premier League victory, we beat Newcastle at home 4-0, and like you say, you know, I scored another goal. So then we had an international break, and everything was going really well, to the point where I remember sitting down with my wife and saying, you know, it's something that I don't like to be like, but when things are going so well, you always think there's just something around the corner. And I remember saying it to her. And then obviously the Chelsea game came about. And like I say, everyone was full of confidence going into that game.
And the strange thing about the game, from your perspective and from what happened, is for 90 minutes, nothing happened. I mean, it was a good game, good performance. I think you hit the, not you personally, but Stoke hit the woodwork a couple of times. Or went one up, one all draw. Very good result, and a very bad result for Chelsea at the time. So it had been a really good day.
Yeah, it had been. We started the game really well. I think John Walters got us into the lead, and then Chelsea came back into it, and they were dominant towards the end of the first half. The second half, there's only going to be one winner, and it was ourselves. We were by far the better team. You know, we took control of the game, and we were unfortunate not to get the 3 points. And like you say, you know, the first 90 minutes of the game were all right, but then what unfolded after that in the next 3 or 4 minutes weren't so great.
So what did unfold? I mean, if it's not too painful for you, can you remember what happened in the, I think it was the 92nd minute of the game?
What had happened, we were still attacking, still believing that we could win the game, and we got a set piece. We had a corner probably about the 91st, 92nd minute, and I was always designated to go up for corners, but usually what would happen is if we got a corner late on, I'd be running up, and all you heard was Tony Pulis telling me in uncertain terms, you know, get back. You know, you don't need to go up there. We'll defend what we have, and we're happy with it. But I think there was an inkling from him, because I had scored in the previous two games, and because of how confident I felt every time I went forward for a set piece, that I could maybe score again. And so I went up, and he didn't say anything to me. And then the corner came in, and I remember it as clear as day. It came in, and Petr Cech come to challenge me, and I got there before him. I won the ball, and it was going in, and I think it was Ivanovic cleared it off the line. But then as I landed on a straight leg. And honestly, it's one of the things where people always say the most innocuous challenges sometimes end up being the worst. And that's what happened. I landed on a straight leg, and Cech, he caught me on the shin. But honestly, it was like a feather. There was no major contact. But because I was on a straight leg, my knee went one way, then the other. And I've never known such pain in my life. You know, I was on the floor, and then Chelsea obviously trying to get the winner. They played on, and they went down the other end and nearly scored. Then Petr Cech realised the pain that I was in, and he come over to see me. And for 45 seconds to a minute, I'd probably say it's the worst pain I've ever had in my life. And it's not something I'm proud of, but it was like banging the ground and things like that, because I've been shown how I'd done the injury before, and I was banging the ground in it. Looking back, you feel like a bit of a clown. And then the physio came on and the doctor, and they said to me, said, you know, we can feel an end point, which is usually a good sign. It means that, you know, your cruciate's still intact. So I've got up, like I say, feeling a bit of a fool as I walked off to carry on the game. And I walked off to the side, and then I came back on the pitch. And then I think the first thing I had to do was defend a clearance from Cech, and I went up for a header with Drogba. And as I landed, I'll never forget, my right knee was just swinging in the wind. And they were still going on the attack, so I think Chelsea got a throw-in near the corner flag, and I couldn't continue, so I just sat down. So the referee had no choice but to stop the game, and then I went off the pitch and saw the physio afterwards. And, you know, at the time, he said that he could still feel an endpoint with my cruciate. And so, you know, he just said to me, you know, put some tuber grip, you know, some a real tight sock on, like over the hole in my leg, and said, just see how you are in the morning, because if it blows up, then, you know, we've got a problem, but hopefully it'll be all right. And a good friend of mine, who's also a physio, he come and see me in the evening, and he said something along the same lines, you'll see where you are in the morning. So waited until the morning and woke up, and my leg had completely ballooned up. So I went to see the physio, and he just said, listen, he said, just being honest with you, he said, you've done your cruciate. And the next day I went for a scan, and the people at the scan office, they said if we didn't know better, we'd think you'd been in a skiing accident, because it was such a mess. And the reason I had the pain, but then the pain had gone, was because the nerve had just completely severed, so there's no feeling in that area. And obviously it was a really disappointing time for me. You know, I'd gone so long, and, you know, I'd had a few bad injuries before, but I'd gone so long without really having an injury that had put me out for 6, 7, 8 months. And when you hear the word cruciate, you know, it's a lot of players' worst fears, and especially at the age that I got it at.
And can you remember how you slept that night? Because the pain thing's interesting. You talk about pain like you never felt it, and you felt more pain than most of us being a professional footballer. But there was no pain. Presumably, did you sort of sleep okay and see how it would be in the morning? You didn't maybe realise the gravity of it, the potential gravity, but it could have been okay.
I think, do you know what? I think the realisation hit me straight away, because one thing I will say is that whether it be stupidity or trying to be brave in other situations, is that I've played through pain before, and I know pain that's not right and pain that you can deal with. I remember going home and I had a few drinks that night, and I didn't worry about it. I slept soundly because I knew in the back of my mind that something wasn't right. And obviously knew what was just around the corner as well, as in terms of the FA Cup semi-final and everything. So I slept soundly, and when I woke up in the morning, I think any doubts that I had of the severity of the injury that I'd done came home to roost when I woke up and saw the size of my knee.
And you've already touched on the age issue. There's a big difference doing your cruise ship at 22 to doing it at 32. Did you realise gradually over that weekend, over the Sunday into the Monday, how big this was for you potentially?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I did until I got back and I realised that football had left me behind. I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do as much. I wasn't as mobile. And the biggest thing was for me, and it's the advice I'd give to anybody that has a serious injury, is don't rush it back. I was desperate to get back. I was back within 6 months. And, you know, looking back, I remember playing my first game back in the Europa League for Stoke out in Israel. I was running with a limp. And the day I did my cruise shoot was the beginning of the end of my career. I have no problems with saying that because I was never the same player again. Because obviously the age that I'd done it at. The disappointing thing for me was I think I was probably, you know, near enough at playing some of the best football of my career. And that was disappointing, but it is what it is, and you know, you move on from it.
What's that period like? Because, you know, it'll be fans listening to this show, not footballers who know about it. We imagine you on a bike on your own in the gym every day, and we always hear that you're separated from the team and stuff like that. Is that how it is?
It is. The manager wanted me to go to Austria pre-season. I had no interest in it. Didn't want to go. I said I'd rather stay at home on my own and just do one-to-one gym work. The physios and the fitness coaches there, they become your best friends and your punch bag. They know when you're having a good day, know when you're having a bad day. The work first thing for me was the club had got to semi-final of the FA Cup. I didn't want them to win the semi-final and I didn't want them to win the final either. It was a horrible feeling because I was so jealous. I remember going to the games, I was like, come on, just get beaten. I can just go away and the FA Cup's finished with, and then they got to the final. It's horrible because it was such a fantastic dressing room. But for me, it was human nature. And for me to say anything other than that now would be a lie. It was a horrible, horrible feeling. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be at the semi-final. I didn't want to be at the final. I wanted to be as far away from it as possible. And as soon as it was over, you know, I was a lot happier. I was delighted that the lads did well in the cup. But like I say, for me, there was a massive amount of jealousy from me. And I'd be a liar if I said that I wanted the team to win the FA Cup, which is an awful thing to say. But it's just me being honest at the time.
It's funny because a lot of ex-footballers and current footballers don't have the gift of self-awareness, I find, from my position of talking to you. You're a rare one in that you do. So at the time, did you hate yourself for thinking that?
Yeah. Hated myself. I was like, I'd speak to my friends, my close friends and my family and things like that. And I said, you know, it makes me a horrible person for wanting things like that and for thinking things like that I didn't want the team to be successful, you know, and win the FA Cup and the semi-final and things like that. And what they were saying to me, oh yeah, well, you know, you had a part in it, you scored during the quarterfinals. That was nothing to do with it. For me, you're only part of it if you're actually on the pitch. It's as simple as that, no matter what people try and say. And I did, you know, you question yourself, you know, am I a bad person for thinking that? But I think the more that I spoke to my close friends about it, it was just human nature. You know, it was success that you wanted to be part of. And regardless of what anybody says, you know, I got a medal at the end of it, but I couldn't even tell you where that medal is now because it's nothing to do with me. I didn't have any participation in the final. I didn't have any participation in getting to the final from the semi-final. So for me, it's a cup final medal, albeit a loser's medal that means absolutely nothing to me.
Did you get funny looks, though, from your friends? You say that they accepted it, but did you get that sort of reaction from them? Blimey, Danny's just said that, you know, he doesn't want them to win the cup. Did you get that reaction, do you think?
I think I did because my friends know that I'm a very relaxed, chilled out, mild-mannered person and don't get angry. I'm not a jealous person or anything like that, but that really did get to me. So yeah, some of them give me a little bit of a double take, but it was just the way that I felt. And like I say, you know, I didn't want to feel that way and it was an awful feeling to be like that. But I'm sure if a lot of people were honest, I'm sure a lot of people would say the same thing. You know, some might choose not to admit it, but I've admitted it before because it's been and gone now, and it's how I felt at the time. And I think if I lied about that, then, you know, what's the point in talking and having these conversations?
So you came back too soon.
Yeah.
You're limping in Israel, as you described it. Did you know then that the injury, what had happened back in April 2011, had been the beginning of the end? Did that start to dawn on you and you're thinking, I haven't got long left here?
When you're in the middle of it, no. I don't think it's until you retire and then you evaluate and you look back and think, you know, did I carry on playing a year too long? I think what happened with me, because, you know, like I say, I've said before, technically I wasn't the most gifted. It was my desire, my commitment and my determination and the fact that, you know, I considered myself, when I was playing, one of the fittest lads on the pitch. And when that started to go, I knew that it was going to be downhill from there. And it wasn't tough to take. It was a matter of judgment. And I think the fact was as well that when I did come back from injury, you know, I was hitting 32, 33 anyway. So the realisation was there anyway that my career was going to start start to slow down. Obviously, slower than what I thought it would have done before my injury. I have no doubts that if I hadn't have done my injury, I would have had another year at Stoke City. You know, being involved in the Premier League team because of the way things had gone. But like I say, you know, the injury had just forwarded things. And when I came back, I just felt a difference. I felt as though everybody had. I felt like everybody had got faster and quicker and stronger and things like that, but it wasn't. It was that I'd got slower.
And you didn't get your place back in the team, really, did you? And had to go out on loan. But was that the right decision by Tony Pulis? You, again, talking of that self-awareness that you have, would you have done the same?
Yeah, 100%. I was done at the highest level then. The thing is with Tony Pulis, he'd always go to the tried and trusted. And we'd played in Europe on Thursday, which was my first game back when we played in Israel. And then we played Bolton on the Sunday away and got beat 5-0. I was on the bench and came on. I think we had an international break. And I played and it was embarrassing. I had come back too soon. We played QPR and I got torn to pieces. But like I say, hindsight's a wonderful thing. For me, looking back, I go, well, you know what, I probably would have given myself another month or 2 months. But when you've been out for, whether it be 5, 6 months, whatever it is, you just want to get back and you want to get back playing. And I did, and it was then I realised really that my time was probably up in the Premier League. I think if I'd have had another 2 months of rehab and things like that, I don't think it would have been any difference. I think that was just where I was in my career. I played a few more games in the Europa League and then went on loan to Nottingham Forest. In the January 2012, that would have been. And you know what? That was, looking back, you evaluate things when you finish playing, and that was probably the last time I enjoyed my football. And I still carried on playing for another, I think, 2 years after that.
So you went to Ipswich, didn't you, on loan as well, and then to Sheffield United. So you just didn't enjoy Sheffield United at all.
Do you know what? It was where I was, I think, in my career. Sheffield United was a fantastic club, fantastic people there, fantastic players, the supporters. As you know, it's a huge football club. The same with Ipswich. It was me. It was all down to me. I'm not going to sit here and say it was the managers that I had and the players. And it was nothing. It was all me. I could see myself slowly but surely falling out of love with the game. And someone said a while ago, I don't know if it was Jamie Carragher, which is leave the game before it leaves you. And I'd got to that point when I was at Sheffield United. I wasn't enjoying anything, the games, the training. And like I say, it was me as an individual, nobody else, because the coaches at them clubs, like I say, Ipswich and Sheffield United, were absolutely first class. The players the same as well. And it was a realisation for me. And I think the good thing from my point of view is that I realised it, and I didn't try to be clever with it or anything, and I sort of knew when my time was coming to an end.
How hard do you think you were to be around at that time, that sort of period between the injury, the rehab, then the falling out of love or the realisation it was over? Do you think you changed a little bit as a person in that time?
No, I'd probably say I took a different role. I think that's when I took more of an interest with the younger lads within the team, you know, and sort of being the father of the group, you know, to speak to for advice. So I took on another role. But for me, it was always about playing football. I didn't care, you know, if I'm at a football club, whether it be Sheffield United, whether it be Ipswich, and young lads are coming up to me and asking for advice, that's all well and good. But when there's no game on a Saturday, it was no good. And I got at Sheffield United, I had a year left on my contract and I'd had enough. And a few clubs wanted to take me on loan. You know, David Weir had come in and he'd made his decisions. He wanted to go over a younger squad. And a lot of the senior professionals went, which, looking back, I think he will agree it wasn't the greatest of ideas for him to do that, to have just such a young squad. But I left and ended up going to part-time. And during that period, last year and a half of my career, I started to do things in the media world and was starting to enjoy it. So by me going part-time, which I did to Chester, I was closer to home and it was training twice a week. So it meant I could have the best of both worlds and then see what I wanted to do, as in terms of how long did I want to carry on playing and how long would I continue to try and do the media things to see if it suited me. And that's what started to happen. You know, it was a snowball effect with the media, and football was getting in the way. And then come January, I always promised my friends that, you know, my hometown club would be where I'd finish my career. And it was Altrincham. They're in the Conference North, and I played one game, didn't feel great, and then played in the second game away at Gainsborough. I think we got beat 5-3 or something. After about 50 minutes, there was a 50-50 challenge. And I didn't go into it. I absolutely bottled it. I didn't want to get hurt. And I come off the pitch and the first thing I did was ring my family and say, I'm finished, I'm done. That's me. And it was, everybody says there's a moment in your football career and you either choose to acknowledge it or you just carry on regardless. And for me, I acknowledged it. I knew that I didn't want to be kidding anybody or fooling anyone. I couldn't carry on doing something that I no longer enjoyed doing, as in terms of playing football, and the decision had been made.
Was that literally a phone call off the field? Was it a shower first, presumably, and then put your gear on and then make the goal? But you did genuinely make it within, say, half an hour at the final whistle.
Yeah, I'd threatened it. I'd threatened it a few times, saying, you know, I've had enough now. But then I'd get up the next morning. I was like, no, I'm gonna keep going. I'd done that a few times within them 6 months. But no, it was an instant, and I'll never forget. We were on the bus coming home, and I spoke to the assistant manager who I didn't know too well at the time, and I was really open with him. You know, I'd only just signed for him. I said, listen, I just don't feel right. I don't feel as though I'm doing myself justice. I don't feel right taking, even though I'm not getting much money from you. This is my club. This is a club that I grew up supporting and things like that. And it just doesn't feel right. And they said, you know, we'll have a think about it. And I spoke to the manager and the assistant manager the next day. And the manager had only met 4 days briefly. Said to me, just said, Danny, said, how are you feeling? And I told him exactly how I was feeling. And he just said to me, before I went off the phone, he went, you finished, aren't you? And that was a lovely realization, because he'd acknowledged it from the chat we'd had, and it was like an emotional moment, because football, which is something that, you know, the only thing that I'd known longer than football was my mum, dad, and my older brother. Football had been there, you know, with the three of them near enough since I was born. And the realization for me was, yeah, you know what, it had to come to an end. Apart from, like, say, 5 minutes of. Well, not 5 minutes, apart from probably that evening when I decided to retire, having a few drinks with my family and things like that, I haven't missed anything about it.
So no regret the next day? Relief the next day, maybe?
I wouldn't say it was so much relief, because it wasn't something that I felt as I was holding back. It was, for me, a way of deciding what I was going to do next. And it's what I say to young lads now whenever anyone asks me for advice. I'm like, listen, if you can help it, do not retire. It doesn't matter what level you're playing at. Do not finish playing football until you know what you're going to do next. And that was exactly my situation. It fell really well for me. But no, nothing. There was a realisation that, yes, it was over. But come Saturdays at 3 o'clock, you know, and people say it to me now, you know, would you not rather be on the pitch there than up in the Gantry doing commentary? Not a chance. There's nothing, you know. People talk about footballers and things like that, and don't get me wrong, it's the best job in the world. It really is, and you know, I'm so blessed and so fortunate. And I think a lot of players that do finish maybe feel a little bit sorry for themselves afterwards, because what they're going to do next, because nothing can compare. Now, you look at players at Manchester United, your Manchester City, your Barcelona, all your top clubs in the world, they're used to winning week in, week out. They're used to winning trophies. You know, for us, you know, don't get me wrong, we had some fantastic seasons in the Premier League, and you know, some top 10 finishes at various clubs that I was at and things like that. But more often than not, one game for us was like two or three games for Manchester United. And especially in that era, Manchester United were cruising and won most games after 65 minutes. We had to sweat blood, tears and everything for 90 minutes, and to the point where, you know, your body can only handle so much of it. And for me, like I say, I consider myself so fortunate, so lucky to have been able to have the career, and I made the most of it. People come up to me and say, you know, how would you like to be remembered like football and playing? I said that I overachieved, and people say, well, you don't want anyone to say you overachieved. I said, well, of course I do. It means I couldn't do it anymore. The worst thing is that, you know, if there's lads when they finish playing football and someone comes up to them and goes, you should have done more than what you did in your career, nothing you can do about it. I love it when people come up to me, and if they ever do and go, you overachieved, I go, that'll do me, because I know that I couldn't do it anymore. So I was able to turn my back on playing, knowing that I'd not let myself down. I couldn't have done any more than what I've done. And that would be the only regret, I think, for a large majority of footballers, and it's one that I could never have.
And two final things. One is, just to put the injury back into context, your body still gives you trouble, doesn't it? People don't realise this. I remember talking to you once. I think you went for a run and you still struggle the next day and stuff. It almost feels like your body told you, listen, enough.
It's the recovery after games. It becomes more difficult. But now, yeah, especially not so much in the summer, but in the winter months and what have you, you know, my back will play up, and my knees will play up, my ankles, everything. But you know what? It's like people say that, because quite a lot of my injuries could have been prevented by saying no to playing. But rewind the clock back to the exact day when the manager said, are you okay to play? I'd still say yes. So I'd be a hypocrite if I said elsewise. So yeah, I have a little bit of pain and what have you, but to have the enjoyment that I had for 15, 20 years of my life as a professional footballer, then it's worth every single bit of pain that I get, whether it be morning, noon or night.
And just finally, do you ever think back to that April day and think what might have happened if he'd left you out, or if you'd come off in the 65th minute, or had a niggle that you'd probably have played with a niggle anyway, that's irrelevant, but had an injury or something?
No, I think it was any ordinary season, then no. But obviously, you know, as a kid, and you're playing out with your mates at the local park, and you're playing Wembley and things like that, and it's your dream to play in an FA Cup final. So that's the only thing. But the one thing I said is that, you know, I'm 37 now, I think. Yep, 37. And my biggest disappointment has been I missed an FA Cup final. Now, 37 years of age, if that's your biggest disappointment, then I think you're very fortunate, because there's a lot more important things that have gone on in the world. And for me, as bizarre as it sounds, doing my cruise ship was the start of my next career. So, you know, I always believe, to a certain extent, not your awful tragedies and illnesses and things like that, but everything happens for a reason.
And that was the end of his club career, although he enjoyed a brief international swan song with Gibraltar, which is a different story altogether. Danny is now a hugely respected figure in the media and brings that drive and energy to everything that he does. Whatever he'd ended up as, he'd still have wanted to be the best there'd ever been, striving, achieving, never giving up until his body and his mind says enough. Next week on The Match, after a tale of an ending, we're back to beginnings. It's I Will Not Be Watching, a story of a woman and a football match, and of how surely those two things can never come together.
For me, looking at this stuff, I just couldn't get my head around it, because I wasn't doing anything different to anybody else. I was just a female. That was all.
The Match is a Speechless Media production in association with IMG Media, and thanks to all of those involved in it for their support and considerable skill. They are Matt Vines, Steve Tebb and Ollie Neen, and all of the IMG team. And thanks too to Danny Higginbottom for his time and patience and sincerity.
This time last year, I dreamed that you'd gone. So strange to feel obliged to stop and mourn. I dreamed you'd gone. Woke and saw you and cradled your head, thought of a million things and one that I could say to you instead. We passed the time, dear, and I cradled your head. I like to keep things simple, I hate to get too solemn. If I say that people kill for what we got in common, would it be too ungrateful to say it's just not enough for us to remain? Last night, you